Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. What a night, man. The game lived up to everything. We'll talk about that. The Cardinals game this coming Saturday night. Steve Keim will be with us on today's show, Cardinals general manager. Looking forward to visiting with Steve. It's just now been over 3 years since Steve was promoted to general manager. And I think that there were times during this season where he had to have felt like, okay, I got this team in a position to be a playoff team. Anybody who talks to general manager in July and August, what do you think about your team? Oh, we're going to be good. We hope to compete. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's all the same nonsense. But there has to be some point in the season where a GM gets into his vehicle, drives away from the stadium and says, you know what, I think we got this figured out. And I'm dead certain, and I'm going to talk to Steve Keim about this, that that was not the case early in the year. They had to go get Chris Johnson. They had to go get Dwight Freeney. I feel like once they got Freeney, and it wasn't the day they got him because they eased him in, but it made other players and then the development of players too. And I want to talk to Steve Keim too about how is it that he and Bruce Arians have stayed out of the lanes of one another. I know that that's been a storyline that's been done before, but I've never just chatted with him about that. So looking forward to having Steve Keim with us. Peter King will join us today, the Monday morning quarterback, as he does every week here on the show. No one better than Peter, the great MMQB columnist, will Skype in from his apartment in New York City. And I need to talk to Peter about Vontaze Burfict. So, and reading the MMQB, I think I kind of know where Peter's going to go with this, but you just never know. And then Brad Edwards is going to be with us actually in about 15 minutes. ESPN, a college football insider, good friend of the show, and he was at last night's game. He saw Alabama in Clemson. And so we'll talk with Brad about the game and put a wrap on the 2014-2015 season. That will be with Brad Edwards and Nick Saban's legacy and all that. So, ton of football today. I went to the game yesterday afternoon, got over to the stadium, I don't know, what was it, like 4 hours beforehand. And there's a lot of stories that I could spin from last night's game and just how, as Arizona-centric as we are, this is not meant to bash where we live. It's not meant to bash you if you're an ASU or U of A fan. there are miles and miles of ground that need to be made up, not just with the teams on the field, but even the fan base. Like Clemson scores a touchdown and their fans go nuts. And then as they go out to attempt the extra point, they just go dead silent, because they know better. I didn't see any fights last night. I didn't see anybody act stupid. I saw grown-ups having a great time. They were chanting and doing all the things that they do in between plays, running out to the restroom. They're chanting in the restroom. They're getting their beers. They're all high-fiving. There's no nonsense in the parking lot. I'm one of those that football has its place, and obviously it is dominant within our society. I still lean towards college over pro. I don't get into environments that are as fun as last night's when I go to a pro game, especially when it gets to the Super Bowl, because it's very corporate. I'm not bagging on the NFL. It's just a fact. These were common fans wearing their jeans and their cutoffs. You could tell who was from Clemson and who was from Alabama last night. And I could insert a whole bunch of jokes off that, but I won't. But there was just a feeling around the stadium, the anticipation of the national title game. And we have said college football is the greatest of the sports. And it's got its problems. You know, you hope that the people that put the college football playoff in place, you hope the people that run the champ game, who did a terrific job, Gina Lee and their company did a terrific job last night, can keep it like this rather than big corporations swooping in and turning it just into another black tie event, and let's invite four sponsors who have no interest in being there. I was talking to a business guy last night. He was saying that this is more fun than anything else he gets invited to. And this guy gets invited to a ton of NFL. That there is something about 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds that are running around and doing their thing on the field. Deshaun Watson, next year's Heisman race, I'll talk to Brad Edwards about this. Next year's Heisman race, you've got Christian McCaffrey, and you've got Deshaun Watson, and you've got Leonard Fournette. that's big time, because I'm watching him last night, and I don't know if I'm seeing Cam Newton. Eric, what'd you think? I don't know if I'm seeing Cam Newton come up in my radar.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, he was the best player on the field last night, in my opinion, on either side. And if you're Dabo Swinney, you're going to look back on this game, like all coaches who lose in title games do, and look at about three or four plays where Clemson was in position to make plays defensively and didn't, and it equaled three long touchdowns, and basically that was the difference in the game. Like, it's not like Alabama made a bunch of great plays. They had two busted coverages and a little swing pass where the corner took a bad angle and the guy ran all the way down the sideline to basically seal the game. I mean, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, O.J. Howard was the guy that everybody was talking about.
Right, exactly.
Like, who?
But that's the way it works. I mean, we've seen it in Super Bowls, too. Timmy Smith and other just guys that are just sort of under
David
the radar.
Tyree.
That's it. Yeah. Yep.
No, you're right. But I think last night, the onside kick by Nick Saban was one of the more amazing play calls that I've ever seen.
And a perfect kick. I mean, he couldn't walk it out there and place it in that gunner's hands any better than he did.
And you know they've got to work on that over and over and over and over. And heard an interview after the game with Herb Street. Herb Street said he spoke with Nick Saban and that they saw something earlier in the season. They see something earlier in the season when they have that tight bunch formation on kickoffs. And you've got to practice that. When people say, oh, all kickers do is stand around and do nothing, and kickers aren't important. I don't know. If you're a Vikings fan, how are you feeling about your kicker right about now with Blair Walsh? Okay. Or even your holder. If you want to say the laces were spun inward. Last night, the kicker doing what he did to place that kick in that moment and to make that play call, because it was the long pass down the sideline that up to that point, I didn't think Coker was very good. I mean, of the two quarterbacks, it's not even close who I take. But that long pass down the sidelines, and then leads to the field goal, and then they recover the onside kick. That was the game. Those three plays, I'm sitting there watching saying, that's it. And you can rip on Nick Saban all you want, but that just shows you the attention to detail that he had that much faith in his special teams. Think if that play blows up. If that play doesn't work, they probably lose the game.
And it was good for college football, Brad, that they had a real engaging, entertaining championship game after what we watched through 95% of the bowl season.
Yeah, because, look, anybody who's going to bring up, well, the semifinal games weren't any good and they're going to gloss over this. No, this is what we wanted.
Yep.
This is what we wanted, and this will be the lasting memory. So of all the crap bowl games, and there were lots of them, and there are too many of them, and all that stuff, you can go down the list. This is what we want. So we got it. And I have not seen the number yet today. Have you seen the number yet?
Small. 15.8. So it was
15.8, which is what?
It's down, I think, 25% from last year.
Yeah.
20%.
It's a regional deal. Even with this game, as competitive as it was, if you're in Seattle, you're not really watching. If you're in New York City, you're kind of sort of not even there. That's just how it went. And that's their faults. That's people. That's the fan that says I'm into sports that miss it. They miss something great. That's on them. I'm not going to blame the CFP on that. Vontaze Burfict got suspended for 3 games, and he's lucky that was all he got. It's interesting how I've gotten this. You shouldn't be so hard on him, and uglier stuff than that. And I'm just looking at it saying, he has no place in the league if he's going to act like this, if he's going to act like this. The if being, is this going to continue? And it has continued. That's been his story. Go back to Arizona State. This is who he is. Nothing has really changed. And we'll talk with Peter King about Vontaze and the suspension and what he believes should happen. That's coming up. Steve Keim is coming up as well. A few other things going on around the Valley today following the national title game and the Cardinals getting ready for the game on Saturday night. The Suns are on the road. The Coyotes are at the break. The Coyotes are playing pretty well, and we're just about, 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting and the Waste Management Open. So there's just a ton that continues on here in the busiest sports market in America that nobody knows about. Up next, Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, good friend of the show. He'll talk about Alabama's win over Clemson last night in the national title, the legacy of Nick Saban, and I'm going to get to his Heisman for next year, his top five for next year, and where ASU and U of A and all this. That's next with Brad Edwards. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Here now is Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, following Alabama beating Clemson last night. And I guess we got everything that we wanted after weeks of gnashing of teeth, saying all these bowl games are horrible. The semifinals nobody watched because it was on New Year's Eve. But when you put it all together with last night, how can you rip the committee now, Brad?
Well, I think it's hard to. I think they clearly got one and two right. Now, you could say that the BCS would have given us the same game. It would have spared us the semifinals, but they would have given us the same game. But it was everything that I think we could have hoped it would be. And I think we were really hoping for something better after, you know, the semifinal games were not competitive. And then you know, turning around after that and seeing a bunch of non-competitive games on New Year's Day, we were really hungry for something like this. And, you know, whenever Alabama's involved, you always have it in the back of your mind that no matter how good the storylines are or no matter how much a team like Clemson may be set up to succeed against Alabama's defense just because of its dual-threat quarterback and its up-tempo style and all that, you still just wonder, all right, is Alabama going to flip the switch here and bore us for the second half? And obviously that didn't happen. And I think it was just incredibly compelling, not only the way that that Clemson was able to answer with a score. Every time Alabama scored a touchdown to either take the lead or increase the lead, Clemson came right back with some sort of score on the next possession. Now, ultimately, their downfall was that when Alabama went up by a touchdown for the last time, Clemson only answered with a field goal, and then Alabama responded with a kickoff return that made it double digits, and that was what really it didn't end the game, but ultimately, I think that was what the difference was in terms of Clemson getting in a hole that it couldn't climb out of. But there was all sorts of drama. I mean, you just go back to the early part of the fourth quarter. Clemson took over at midfield already with a 24-21 lead, and you're thinking, okay, I mean, the way that the Alabama offense was going at that point, Derrick Henry had really struggled to find running lanes in the second half. Jay Coker seemed like he was a little rattled, and for good reason, because every time he dropped back to pass, he had no time to throw. He kept getting sacked. And you just felt like, okay, if Clemson can get a touchdown here and go up 10, this game could be over, because it was just hard to see Alabama generating enough offense to be able to make up that gap. But Alabama's defense, when it had to, was able to, you know, make plays. They got the ball back, and then Jay Coker on that ensuing possession for the first time made a big play throwing the ball. Just third and long, ends up throwing it up down the sideline, and Ardarius Stewart made a great catch, and that put Alabama in a field goal range to tie the game up, and from that point, the game completely changed.
ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards with us. The onside kick, one of the greatest calls that I can ever remember that I've seen in person in a college football game. The placement of it, just the call itself at that point in time of the game. What'd you make out of that, Brad?
Well, first of all, when you see the unexpected onside kick, it's typically done with a little dribbler. Like the kicker just kind of hits it right up the middle, just a slow roller,
right.
And you take advantage of the defense retreating downfield. Everyone goes ahead and kind of blocks their guys, and the kicker falls on it as soon as it gets to 10 yards. That's usually the type of kick that works there. But this particular one was more risky, because even though it was open, you're counting on the kicker to hit that ball perfectly,
right,
popping it up in the air and dropping it in a spot where your guy can, if not catch it out of the air, at least catch it off one bounce. Because, look, you've seen it enough. I mean, if you let that ball hit the ground, you never know where it's going to go, and right. It could easily just take a quick hop and go out of bounds, even though you had drawn it up perfectly. And so it was a combination of just the gutsy call at that moment in time and the perfect execution by Alabama. And, you know, there are a couple things here. One is that I think it's so impressive that Nick Saban, with the defensive mentality that he has, was able to swallow his pride at that point and admit that his great defense was having trouble stopping Deshaun Watson.
They were
gassed. Because of that,
yeah.
They needed to take a chance,
yep.
and attempt to get the ball back without giving Watson another chance to answer what Alabama had just done. And so I think that was the first part of it. The second part is just recovering it is not enough. You've got to capitalize on it at that point. And Alabama was able to, they got a busted coverage, and they completed the pass to O.J. Howard, the tight end, and they ended up going from a field goal to tie the game to very quickly taking a 7-point lead after the recovery of that onside kick. But once again, it's like if you don't score off of that, then as impressive of a play as it was, it's really not worth a whole lot. And so Alabama, they did everything they had to do. Every big play there was for them to make, they made it during that game. And at the same time, you look back at Clemson and all the opportunities they missed, or the breakdowns on special teams, the busted coverages, in the secondary. Mm-hmm. And I think for most of that game, I felt like Clemson was the better team. They just made mistakes, and Alabama didn't.
Sometimes you've got to get to the door and then kick it in a year later, and maybe that is the case with Clemson. They're so young, and it takes me over to Deshaun Watson and the Heisman next year. Be the Heisman next year, you're going to have Fournette, you're going to have McCaffrey, and you're going to have Watson. What a heavyweight group for 2016.
Oh, yeah. And there are other guys, too. Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma, I'm sure we'll have something
sure.
to say about that, too. And there are always guys who kind of come out of the woodwork. That's really been the theme of the Heisman in recent years, guys that would not have been in your top five candidates going into the season end up winning it. And so that's going to be a fascinating race. But the good news for college football is there's a lot of star power going into next year. I think one of the interesting things, and I'm not sure if it affects Clemson, I can't remember who they open with, but you look at the slate of games for the opening weekend of next college football season, and it looks better than the bowl lineup. And there are so many matchups of high profile teams, most of them on neutral fields, and there are going to be a lot of ranked teams, a lot of top 20 teams that are going to take a loss right out of the gate, because there are going to be a lot of head to head matchups between those teams. And I think it's going to present some interesting scenarios for the selection committee, because as far as I'm aware, That's good for the sport. This is what we want to see. We want to see good teams go out and challenge each other. But if you're going to overly penalize a team for losing a game like that, especially in the opening week of the season, then I don't think we're going to see that quality of a slate scheduled in the future. Because I guess if the idea is that if you just go undefeated, we're going to put you in the playoff. Or if you have one loss, that's better than having two losses. If that's the attitude the committee takes, then we're going to kind of be robbed of games like this. But that's something to look at. I mean, just take a peek when you get a chance at the opening week of the schedule for next season. And it really is awesome. And like I said, it's going to feel like bowl season. But these are games where they're all going to count, and they're all going to have major impact potentially on the national championship race right out of the gate.
Got about a minute and a half in the segment, and I've got two quick questions. A, your top five for next year, do you even have it? Would it be Alabama, Clemson, Clemson, Alabama? Do you have a quick top five?
I don't, but one thing I will say is that I don't expect Alabama to be up there.
Mm.
And I realize Nick Saban has had to reload many times, but he is going to lose a ton of talent. We don't even know how much yet, because the guys haven't declared for the draft, the ones that can come out early. And I think there'll be a couple of surprises, guys that they're not thinking are ready that might decide to bolt. And look, if Alabama's going to have a first-year starter again, this will be the third year in a row they've had a first-year starter at quarterback. And if he's not great, then I really don't see them being able to overcome the losses that they're going to have personnel-wise and be a contender again next year.
And lastly, and this is more regional, and if you don't have much, I get it. Arizona State and Arizona had just bitterly disappointing seasons out here. Do you anticipate things being better in 16 for Rich Rod and Todd Graham?
Well, they could be, just because I think you look at the Pac-12 South as a whole, and it was disappointing. I mean, look, except for Utah, and even Utah, the end of the season was disappointing, the way that it kind of slipped away in the final few weeks. I mean, who in that division really feels good about what happened last year? I think they all, you know, are going to go into next year with a hunger and feeling like that, they need to improve. And so somebody's going to. Somebody in that group will. And I don't know that you can say that anyone's more likely to do it than anyone else. And so that's just my take on it. I don't know off the top of my head what everybody has coming back. I just know that the way that division played out this year, that they've got to be better next year, because there's really too much talent on those rosters for those teams to lose as many games as they did in 2014.
Appreciate your time and your insight, Brad. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Stay well. There's Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider. Always good to catch his insights on things around the college football scene. Steve Keim joins us on the other side, Arizona Cardinal general manager, jumping on board with us. Looking forward to chatting with Steve Keim. And then Peter King. We talk with Peter about Vontez Burfict and if the 3-game suspension was enough. And we'll also get the latest from Peter on the NFL owners in Houston, the movement of St. Louis, Oakland, San Diego. We'll get the latest from Peter. That's in about 20 minutes. But up next, the great general manager, and I do mean great. He's done a terrific job, Steve Keim. That's on the other side. Let's talk further now about the divisional matchup, Cardinals in the playoffs against the Green Bay Packers this coming Saturday night. Game is sold out. Everybody's pumped, psyched, geeked. And why not? Steve Keim with us for a couple of minutes, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, just passing his 3-year anniversary, by the way, as general manager. When did you know that this team that is going to be on the field Saturday night had the chance to do something special? I mean, always it's at the start of training camp, you're optimistic, but you've had to overcome a lot of adversity to get to this point with this team.
Well, Brad, coming out of last season, had a great deal of confidence in the type of roster that we had. Obviously, we were able to make some key additions with Mike Yiapati and some of the players that we also added to the draft and free agency. And so I knew we had a talented roster. Compared to last year, we needed to stay healthy. 26 players to IR last year was, really decimated what we had going on, particularly when we were at 9-1 at one point. But just keeping a healthy team, which we've been able to do for the most part, and to be able to keep Carson upright, right, and for him to continue to play at the high level he's playing at, I would say at one point through the middle of the season, felt like, when we did lose those two games early on, I felt like we beat ourselves. And if we played good football, didn't beat ourselves, and played with focus and enthusiasm, I knew we would have a chance. And obviously that's what we've done with, the 9 straight wins prior to the loss in against Seattle.
It feels to me, Steve, that you don't ever want to say it's all on one person, but if you don't add Dwight Freeney on the defensive side of the football, I don't know if you have enough to get it done. It feels like he's energized everybody, even with the loss of Tyron. Tell me about just Freeney, and has he exceeded your expectations?
Well, I don't know if he's exceeded my expectations, but he's certainly added quite a bit to our ability to rush the passer. And, not only Dwight has been a great addition, but I think the emergence of Marcus Golden has been an excellent find for us as well. I mean, he's a guy that we drafted in the second round. We knew he was an energy-driven player, but he has continued to grow and get better as a rookie. And once we got to around Thanksgiving, you really saw Marcus grow and develop as a player in the National Football League, which has been fun to watch. And again, I think that when you combine his explosiveness and his motor, and then you throw in Dwight's ability to create pressure with that patented spin move, those guys have been fun to watch, and it certainly helped our ability to rush the passer.
If he were eligible this week to come off the injured list, could Chris Johnson go right now for you? I know he's not eligible until the Super Bowl, but could he go for you right now? Where's he at?
Well, he's just now returning to practice. So from an injury standpoint, he's healthy. We just got to get him in football shape. You know, when you haven't played football in 7 weeks, it's kind of tough to just jump back in there and get going right away. But over the next 2 weeks, we'll see if we can get him in football shape and see if he's ready to go.
Steve Keim with us, general manager, Arizona Cardinals, on Saturday night, getting ready to take on the Green Bay Packers. I could go up and down your roster, but those two players, Johnson and Freeney, jump out at me as really big-time additions that you have made along with the rest of your organization. Steve, how do you find the balance of staying in lanes between you and Coach Arians? How do you find that balance?
Well, you know, I think it started 3 years ago when we were hired in these particular positions, and it was all about having clearly defined roles and staying in our lane and knowing that he has a job to do, which is to coach his football team. I have a job to supply players on this roster for him. But the biggest thing is we have a tremendous amount of respect for each other and great lines of communication with our owner and president, Michael Bidwell. So the three of us have a great working relationship, again, a great deal of respect for each other, and I think that's the key to any relationship is communication and staying in your lane. Because as you've seen with other franchises that have had some issues at the top, it's guys that veer across those lanes and internal dysfunction follows.
And was it that way from day one with you and Bruce?
You know, I think it was. You know, Coach and I grew up about 10 miles apart, didn't know each other well, but had a tremendous amount of respect for each other, spoke the same language being from that area in Pennsylvania, and knowing that we have a good opportunity here to do something special. And again, I think it's about just having respect for each other and buying into the process early on. You know, obviously, as you work together, the longer you work, you know, you grow and get closer. And we continue to have a great relationship. And again, like I said, Michael has given us the resources and the platform to be able to have success here.
I've had fans ask me, I don't know the answer to this, can Carson get too geeked up for a playoff game? It's been a long time. What do you think about this Saturday night for Carson?
Well, I mean, because he's waited for this for so long and he's coming off an injury and he's played so well this year, I mean, there are signs that you could get geeked up. But, you know, Carson is such a level-headed guy to me. He really keeps his composure. He's got a high degree of mental toughness. So I would anticipate that he's going to play good football Saturday night. And obviously, when you have the type of weapons that he has around him at his disposal, I mean, I think he's primed and ready to go.
Talking with Steve Keim, you look at Green Bay, look like a completely different team from a confidence standpoint, the smile on Aaron Rodgers' face, the laughing and all that. What did you see out of the Packers against the Redskins, and what are you expecting this Saturday night?
Well, you know, I saw a team that, you know, certainly got some of their confidence back, and I think you can attribute that to their ability to run the football effectively. You know, Eddie Lacy was banging the ball pretty well. Starks was running the ball well. So, you know, their ability to run the football, I think, was key because it obviously didn't make them one-dimensional. And Aaron Rodgers' ability to, you know, to have some of the play-action stuff, some of the boots and the waggles that he does so well with, you know, that stuff, it really works well when you're running the football effectively, like any offense would. And I think that because they ran the ball so well, it brought back their confidence. They got some of the pieces back on their offensive line. So they're certainly going to be healthier than they were a few weeks ago when we saw them here at University of Phoenix Stadium. So I'm anticipating we're going to get their best game, but I know Bruce will have our guys ready to go.
You concerned about Cannizzaro at all, Steve, for this Saturday night?
Well, you know, I would say no, because he has made so many big kicks for us over the past 2 years. And, you know, obviously it's well documented that he's had a couple misses here and there. But we have a lot of confidence in Cat, and I think he's going to really be able to produce for us.
Anything else you want to add about this game? You know, pundits are talking this way, that way, that fans should be aware of to look for out of your team on Saturday night.
Well, you know, we haven't played in a few weeks, but I think that this time and the rest is serving us well. I think that the guys had a great week of practice last week, so they'll be focused and energized. I know that the game sold out quickly, so hopefully it'll be a hostile environment and a tough place for Green Bay to come in and play. And hopefully we keep some of the cheeseheads out of the stadium.
Have fun with that. Good luck on that front. But we'll see. Somehow they always manage through the years to find a way, and maybe it's just not as many. Something like
well,
that.
I know the Red Sea will be able to drown them out, so we just got to go come in and play our game and and we'll be able to keep them quiet, hopefully.
I appreciate you coming on with us. We look forward to doing it again. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Brad. Always a pleasure.
Steve Keim, general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, with us for a couple of minutes on all things around Cardinals and the Green Bay Packers. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports Television Show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, following the Suns game against Indiana. And it'll be on at 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. We're back with more after this timeout. Here now is Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback. Must read MMQB. Check it out day in and day out. Great content. All right, Peter, before we get into the Cardinals, and I want to touch on Vontaze Burfict for everybody here in the state of Arizona. The owners' meetings in Houston are coming up, and NFL fans around Arizona, New Mexico, Vegas, where they check out the show, want to know from your point of view, what will the end result in Houston be with the NFL?
Well, Brad, I think one of the things that you can say going into this meeting is that there is no proposal as of, I'd say, yesterday at about noon, okay, before the owners started arriving in Houston. There was no proposal that had the mandatory required 24 votes to pass. In other words, a lot of people have said, well, the Chargers, they're a virtual certainty to be in LA next year. And I think it's likely that the Chargers will be either the team or one of the teams there. But if you asked the owners right now at this moment, 32 men to sit in a room, women, whoever votes, you know, I'm talking about Detroit, and whoever votes on that, I think it would be highly unlikely that anything would get 24 right now. But if you're talking about what has the best chance, okay, to work, in my opinion, somewhere, the Rams and the Chargers, with Oakland being given the ultimate sweetheart deal to go back to somewhere in the East Bay, somewhere in Northern California. But that's my gut feeling. If I had to go to Vegas right now and put money on it, I would. I'd rather put money on the over-under win total for the Diamondbacks next year, because I just really have no idea.
So it would surprise you, though, if nothing were accomplished at this meeting, correct?
That would surprise me. But here's what I was told over the weekend. There's an outside chance that there's not a vote taken in Houston, but at some point in the next, say, 3 to 4 weeks, there will be a vote taken and this whole thing will get resolved, for better or for worse.
Peter King with us, the Monday morning quarterback. Cardinals, Packers, Saturday night. What are you expecting? I mean, we saw Aaron Rodgers just toting it and slinging it and smiling and having fun. 3 weeks ago, it looked like somebody ran over his dog.
I agree. You know, I think one of the most interesting things about this whole story involving the Green Bay Packers is that, you know, over the last month or so, Aaron Rodgers has been almost morose. Mm-hmm. Because Rodgers lets so few people into his world, you know, nobody knows exactly why. The popular theory is that he wasn't really happy with how a lot of things that have gone down this year, but he hasn't been happy with the development of Devontae Adams, hasn't been happy that Mike McCarthy took the play calling back, a lot of those things. But we don't know exactly why it is. I will say this. It was very, very interesting on Monday, yesterday, in watching the sort of aftermath of this game, how everybody in Green Bay really feels like that game Sunday in Washington was a turning point. And it felt like a turning point. It's the only time all season that Randall Cobb and Devontae Adams in the same game have caught a touchdown pass. So I think one of the things that Aaron Rodgers did in this game that was very, very smart, after getting the early safety, he just decided, I'm throwing it fast. I'm not going to sit in this pocket. I can't rely on anyone here except me. And that's what he did the entire game.
What do you expect out of Carson Palmer Saturday night, Peter? The lack of playoff experience is obviously a big line of discussion here in Arizona. What are you expecting out of him? You know him well. You've done a big takeout on him this year. What are you expecting?
I would expect, Brad, that the biggest thing is that he's going to feel better physically than he has felt, you know, because he's basically going to have had 13 days between games or 12 days between games. So I think that's number one. And number two, he understands, believe me, that his opportunities now are finite. And I would tell you that if you put him on sodium pentothal, he would say, this is the best chance that I will ever have in my NFL career. Certainly the best chance he's had until now. And, you know, because nothing is promised tomorrow, this is probably the best chance he's ever going to have in his NFL career to win a Super Bowl. So I think everything about this, the arrow is pointing up. You know, certainly it would have been better for them, you know, in my opinion, if, you know, if two other teams would have won over the weekend,
sure.
You know, if Minnesota and Washington had won, because I'd feel a lot better if I were them about facing Minnesota right now anyway than I would feel about facing Green Bay.
Montez Perfect, when he was here, he was a mess. He left ASU in a shambles. Danny White, the great quarterback, former Cowboys, a great Arizona State alum, called him a coach killer on the air, and Dennis Erickson got fired. Are you surprised? Here it is 5 years later, and he's still acting out. This is who he is, Peter, and he makes great plays on one hand. On the other hand, it's unacceptable to have that type of behavior in the National Football League. Where do you come down on Perfect?
Well, there's no question in my mind that at least three games was deserved. You know, Brad, the thing that, you know, in the reporting about this story, it's been referred to by several people, but not enough people. And that is that, you know, the biggest event in causing this three-game suspension by far is his hit on Max Williams in week 17. Mm. I believe that Troy Vincent and those in charge of discipline, Merton Hanks inside the league office, erred in allowing Vontaze Burfict to play. The hit against Max Williams was so egregious, incendiary, and awful away from the play. As bad as Warren Sapp on Chad Clifton a few years ago. Just that was that kind of hit. If I saw that on tape and I was Mike Brown, I would tell Marvin Lewis, we're cutting Vontaze Burfict tomorrow. That's not going to be any way allowed on any team that I own. So I give Mike Brown some blame here. Vontaze Burfict, I would not play on my team. And I give Marvin Lewis blame, too, because obviously at the end of the day, his message did not come across as loud and clearly as it should. And I say the same thing as I said after the Odell Beckham stuff with Josh Norman last month. You can say whatever you want. We can blame whoever we want. But at the end of the day, the coaches are basically the dads here. Mm-hmm. And the coaches have to control this. That's Marvin Lewis's responsibility without any question. And, you know, he has not been able to get Vontaze Burfict under control. In my opinion, he would never play for a team that I managed, owned, coached, whatever. I don't know him as a person, but as a football player, he is the ultimate cheap shot artist of all the players playing in the game today.
Quickly, before we let you go, is he back with the Bengals next year, in your opinion?
I would assume so, because with the Bengals, Mike Brown's whole attitude is, Marvin, I'm giving you the problem children, you handle it. Mm. And if he contributes to them winning, they're going to let him be there. So, look, Mike Brown has a history of this. I like Mike. I covered him. I mean, the first team I ever covered in football was the 84 Cincinnati Bengals, got to know him very well. I think he's a good person, but I think he's dead wrong in enabling people like Vontaze Burfict to come back to his team. But I think he'll be back with the Bengals.
Safe travels, Peter. Appreciate the time and the insight as always. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Take care.
Peter King with us via Skype, joining us from New York. Appreciate his time. Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, Fox Sports Television. It's great to be a part of Fox Sports as well. We're back with more after this timeout.